This is episode 352 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I'm your host, Will. If you will not be turned, you will be destroyed. Hegwood. And tonight, I'm joined by Marcel. Can I see? Manzano.
I didn't say, can I see? I said, I can see. And after 18 years after LASIK surgery, age caught up with me. So this is my first pair of glasses in 18 years. And that's what you look like.
Distinguished. Intellectual. Yeah. You know? Like you could be, like I would assume you'd have a book in your hands.
I do have a book in my hand. Battle of Endor.
That's some good reading material. We also have Orion. My wife is a cookie baking machine. Stan Zuski.
First night of baking cookies. She baked cookies for 3 hours and got 118 cookies baked.
Wow.
I counted because I made a spreadsheet for our orders.
Cookies per hour. That's the stats that we're looking for.
Cookies per hour. All right. 118 divided by 3. I can't do that in my head, so I'm grabbing a calculator. 118 divided by 3. 39.33333333 cookies per hour.
Man, that 333 cookie is going to be the most delicious. We also have James. Headset on. Move along. Move along. Ritter.
Move along. Move along. We'll be streaming this weekend at Adepticon. And if you come by the booth to say hello, and you see the headsets are on, that means you need to move along, because we are live, and come back and check with us later to say hello.
That's very antisocial.
We got work to do, you know?
After last year, we were right in the middle of the action, and it was just constant of, hey, look at me. It's like, as much as I love to see all the beautiful people at Adepticon and Worlds, don't want to be distracted from the game or delivering that high-class stream that you all expect from us.
Speaking of beautiful people, you know I gotta thank the GSP Patreons. They're the what keeps the lights on. They're our largest group of supporters. It's what keeps this podcast on the website, everything running, and even gets us to these events like Worlds coming up this weekend. So you have to check out patreon.com/goldsquadron to become a patron today. Now, before we get too deep into headlines, we have a letter from the editor, a small correction from last week's episode. We were talking about rules, and we wanted to clarify two rules that we were unsure of. Main one, that hasn't changed, same Scorch ruling. If Scorch is somehow tractored with, I think the only way is Seven Sister, and moved, if somehow you move before you roll dice during your attack, the final position must maintain attack arc and remeasures range. So if it's now obstructed, you can activate trick shot. If it's range one, you get an extra die or whatever the case may be. So if
it was range one, now it's range two, you actually lose a die.
You would lose your range one. So whatever the new range is, that is now where Scorch would attack. Normally we see it Scorch and Seven Sister, but maybe you're doing something else crazy halfway through an attack. The other thing is dirges. I believe this is the CIS dirge. Does
come back alive dirge.
Yes. Obviously in combat, his ability triggers an aftermath. But outside of combat, his ability triggers the moment he takes the damage. You roll two dice from a bomblet. That first hit, you pop his ability, see how many damage cards he has remaining, and then you would suffer the second hit from a bomblet. And then, obviously, see if you're alive. So, just to check on that, there's some other instances, like Obi-Wan, I think, as well. Obi-Wan SOC with his droid, or whatever, Doesn't the droid prevent outside of combat damage?
Yes, it does.
That's kind of looped in there as well, because that's got multiple charges, something like that.
It does have multiple.
Yeah, so you do those one at a time. Just like anything else. Except for Iden. Iden's in her own little world, making up her own rules.
Yeah, it turns out the general ruling on Iden is whatever works best for Iden is the is the general ruling.
Yeah, pretty much. I did want to hit up before we, well, actually kind of wrapped up into our first topic, which is obviously the world's coming up. Very exciting. So much going on. We actually want to take a look at the information they posted. It's on their Adepticon website. You just go under events and rules. There's a link floating around, but I can show you the rules. Really, pretty standard tournament stuff. We'll just want to take a peek at it just to see if there's anything we really have to pay attention to. The main thing is the schedule. Obviously, if you guys want to know what's up, when is the world's happening? First, we're going to look at Unconventional Warfare, which is the, I believe Ryan said this is the AMG side event, which has all of their...
It was created by AMG, yep.
Yes. So that's pretty awesome. It does have all the latest product availability, as you'd expect. Though, you have to sort yourself into fighter aces or heavy hitters. Which we kind of, after looking at it, realized that most lists are going to fall into that. You either have to have all small bases or one large base and up to two small bases. So if you have two large bases and two small bases, boom, you're heavy hitters list. So that's the main thing you got to look out for if you want a list to play in Unconventional Warfare, which runs every day. That's really the big thing. Look at this schedule. It's running all weekend. Just make sure to either bring a list with all small bases or one with at least two medium ships.
Two medium or one large.
Or one large. And up to two small ships. So definitely check out that. You might have to switch out for all small bases if you want to play in that Unconventional Warfare League. Though, if you're playing in the World Championship, you don't have to attune to any of those rules. It is going to be pretty standard rules if you played in Store Championships, World Qualifiers, anything like that. Nothing's changing dramatically for the event. We were talking about the world qualifier being four rounds, and depending on the number of invites that there are, the number of invites from that is correlated to the number of participants, up to eight world championship invites if there's 113 players. So very excited to see how that shapes out. That's on Thursday, the last chance qualifier. Then we're looking at the world championships starting on Friday, five rounds. Saturday, five rounds. Then the elimination on Sunday going until the finals. And have the schedule posted here, but starting each day at 9 a.m. So if you're wanting to check out the streams, that's 9 a.m. Central Time. Hopefully, a start of each day. Is there anything I'm missing in these that we should double check on? We did have players must bring two hard copies of their list, printed or written legibly. And of course, you're going to need all your components, as always. Double check your components. If you are traveling to Worlds, build your list right now. Make sure you have all your components.
Speaking of things,
I've never been to a tournament where everybody had everything.
Yeah. Speaking of things to do before Worlds, maybe we should talk about what we do need to do and what you should have going into Worlds.
That's a great idea.
You like that segue?
Yeah. Well, let's just start us off. What are you bringing to Worlds?
I bring in me and, more importantly, a water bottle, because there is nothing that X-Wing nerds do worse than hydrate. That's the last thing on my mind when I'm thinking about going to play X-Wing all day, but that is something that you do need to bring. Bring something to some clear liquids. There is a... What do they call it? The little tricycle that goes around? Am I crazy?
It's a beer cart?
Yeah, the beer cart. Yeah. Yeah, there is a beer cart that goes around.
Oh, fingers crossed on that. They continue that amazing tradition.
Oh, yeah, that would be sad if that did not continue. But it is very cool to partake if that is your wish, but make sure that you do bring some clear liquids, like water mainly, to drink throughout the day, and then also something to help fuel you up, whether that be some like granola bars. What's y'all's favorite long day snack? Like 5-round event snack.
I've generally been a fan of Cliff Bars or any type of like food energy based bar, like just designed to be a potential meal replacement just in case. Especially if you haven't experienced this yet on a like big event where like, oh, you know, my game that round, let's say round 2 or 3, right? My game after that, we're supposed to be having our lunch break, but my game went to time and had a whole other round play because we just started doing our dials before time. So like, I'm done. We record our games, we clean up our stuff, and we got to be back in 15 minutes. Like, do I have time to go get food? Is there a line where food is? Like, have something that actually can replace a meal just in case. Like that level of bar. Whether all your bars that you have with you are of that type is probably debatable, because I don't think I want every single bar I have to be worth an entire meal. But you probably want to have a snack type bar,
you know, you're not
and a meal replacement world. Type bar. I'm going to do what I can to keep my energy and keep fueled. That's the main thing, right? You got to be fueled. You got to be hydrated. I don't think people realize how much calories you burn by just the increased heart rate and stress level and brain expenditure. Like, you think, like, oh, I'm not exercising, running around. Like, you are still burning through calories.
Absolutely. Just don't think of your moves. Just don't think about it.
What about you, Marcel? What's your favorite snack to bring?
I don't know the name of it. It's a hard granola bar. It's in a green...
The Nature's Valley?
Nature Valley?
Do they instantly explode into crumbs?
Yeah, that one. The one that you bite.
Everyone knows.
Half of it goes in your mouth. The other half of it like goes out the floor.
Yep.
Yeah, those. That you get them.
Sounds
at, like
a very inefficient bar.
It's so good, though. Like,
it's delicious. It's delicious.
I don't know how they make it so good. They're so poorly designed.
Yeah, really, yeah. So that's my go-to.
Explodes.
I love those, but yeah, they do leave a mess everywhere. So have like a little
Be courteous, you know.
Yeah, so just be aware. Usually, like if you go like if you eat it like this, then you'll be fine because most of it'll go on you. But yeah, that and if you partake the night before on any partying, which there will be, I'm sure. Enough. Make sure to get yourself some Gatorade, some electrolytes, some. I think we lost James, but yeah, get yourself some Gatorade, electrolytes, Walgreens and CVS and all those places. They sell those little like electrolyte packets that you put in the water, Pedialytes, things like that. Drink a lot of water, and something that I struggle with a lot is not what you bring; it's what you do. Get some sleep. Like, that is usually like my Achilles heel. I have sleep apnea and I have insomnia, so I tend to struggle a lot. Mm-hmm. And the difference that I The difference that I notice when I sleep versus when I don't sleep is night and day. Like, your ability to think, your ability to remain focused and active, and just genuinely just, like, be, you know, food does not replace sleep. Turns out coffee.
No. And Marcel, it sounds like you may have a recent example that you went through yourself at was LVO, if I recall correctly.
Well, actually, that was not sleep. That was a hangover. I did sleep. I slept a lot. just not good sleep and a hangover. But yeah, I had a hangover, and turns out bottomless mimosas is not a good idea at 10 in the morning. No. Yeah, but. Make sure you get good sleep.
Yeah, when Kayla comes up and just apologizes, and we're like, "What are you apologizing for?" And then Marcel troops, like, walks in, stumbles in,
saunters in,
and then we're all like, "Oh, okay, yeah, I understand now."
Yeah. I blame James, Timothy, Tim. I probably blame James too. I'm sure you had some part in it somehow.
Just blame whoever you want. Yep, it works all the time.
but no, yeah, like, make sure you get some sleep. Make sure you get some carbs in you. Make sure you get some protein. I think that it's easy to forget. Like, you need some protein in there as well. Same thing, is you're not running a marathon, but you are doing something physically active, and you know, the stress and the brain power just really burns through those calories, similar to doing something active for the entire day. So just be mindful of that.
What about you, Will? Last go around on snacks.
It's my favorite road trip food. Anytime I'm traveling, you know, it's Pop-Tarts.
Yeah,
they're not nutritionally good. I'm also trying to eat Clif Bars with them. But, man, breakfast, dinner, snacks. They're the only real snack that could be, like, a whole dessert.
Yeah, and breakfast and dinner. And breakfast, like, yeah. Just, like, insert into any meal.
I'll let you know if I get find some savory ones.
Any particular flavor?
The fruit ones, which is kind of weird for me. But we're talking wild berry. We're talking cherry, strawberry. S'mores? Okay. No. Get out of here. Brown sugar? No.
Oh, the brown sugar ones. Come on.
No.
No. Okay. What about things that you mentioned earlier, Will, about bringing things or making sure that you have all of your things available? What are some good tips to make sure that you actually have the things that you need to play? What are some good tips for that?
My best tip is, hopefully, you played a game with your list prior to any event you're going to. And when you play your game, at the end of it, just scoop up everything you used and set it into a particular case. Take everything you didn't. So that 13th shield token, don't even bring it to the event because you didn't need it to play your list. Now, should you bring extra? Sure. But the getting everything out, playing a game with it is the best way. But you're going to forget something. So you always double check. Like I said before, I don't think I've been to an event where everybody remembered everything. It's been a long time if it has. But someone's always forgetting something. Right? Some random upgrade. So always double check.
Yeah.
It's probably cards and those little bases. Easy or harder to forget a model, right? But the, you know, is that Biggs or is it Colby on my X-Wing token, right? Little things like that.
Yeah, I would definitely go through your list and actually make sure that you have, like, if your list is 10 charges, actually have 10 charges available, like, ready to go. And packed away, like Will said. And I think also being going through your damage deck, actually counting out
That's what I was going to say.
You're okay. Sorry, Marcel. You can talk.
No. You can say.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too.
That's the easiest one to not think about, because nobody counts your damage deck until.
I would say count your damage deck, and even go a step further of make sure you actually have the correct cards in your damage deck.
Well, if you have multiple damage decks that have the same backing to it, yeah. But definitely count your damage deck. I personally take a total of 5 damage decks to any event. 1 for me, 1 for Kayla, and 3 because I've never had to dig into any of those. But in most events, I end up letting 1 or 2 people borrow because it's so frequent that it happens that I always have a few of them and they're always used. Because somebody always says, like, oh, I'm at 32. Oh,
I'm at 32, and I've been playing at 32 since the last big event that I went to. Because I haven't played since then.
So make sure you have enough. And if you have an extra one, stash an extra one in there, because that's one. And then another thing that I would add is I think most people that are going to Worlds probably have played in major events, especially if you're participating in the actual Worlds, not in the last chance qualifier, because you won something at some point, right? Like, that's how you got in. But a 10 as a 2-day 10 round event is different than like your 4-game store championship, and things tend to move around a little bit and your brain tends to get fatigued, then probably the stress level's a little bit higher than it is at your local store. So another thing that I would really say to try to do is try to create distinctions between your different ships and your different dials. Because it used to be like if you're flying multiples of the same ship, you want to add some type of visual cue of like which ship is which. But now even if all 5 of your ships are different, but they're all like first order, it happens to me a lot too, because you know you're concentrating so much on the moves. A lot of the dials have this, you know, like a 3-bank is white on many different ships, and it's really easy to mix that up. So, you know, I personally, whether you're using a little bit of nail polish or you're using some paint, or I buy those little like circle stickers, so that you have a visual cue of like, okay, my red ship has my red dial, my blue ship has my blue dial, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because it's really easy when you get into rounds, you know, 4 and 5 or 9 and 10 to just mix dials up. And at Worlds, the likelihood of your opponent telling you like, oh, no, like, it's fine, just whip them. It's a little bit lower because people are usually in try hard mode. So So make sure that you have. And then if you're flying multiples of the same ship, it's not recommended. You must. Just remember, you must have a identifier on each ship, and you must have an identifier for each card that you have. So if you have, 2 droids that are named the same, Separatist 1 and Separatist 2, you got to have a number 1 on your ship, and then you got to have a number 1 on your card, and if they have target locks, they got to have a number 1 on the target lock. So you have to be able to distinguish that, and that is a requirement. That's a rule. That's not a you should. You will be.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than saying, I'm pretty sure I had 2 damage on that vulture. It's like, no, that was the other one. It's like, I'm pretty sure it was that one. So just don't let yourself get in that opportunity. Have a plan for it and already have.
Yeah. And the judges will rule identifiers. Against you if you're not a identifier.
Yeah, if there's any kind of confusion, it's probably going to rule against you.
Well, if there's any confusion, I'm not going to say exactly what the judges will do, but it's more likely wherever things were on the board is probably what we're going to have to move forward with. Unless there's like concrete agreement between both players, the judges are gonna have to make the hard decision, and someone's not gonna be happy. Yep. The best thing is to not open up those opportunities.
Yep. Yeah. Protect yourself from those opportunities. Exactly.
I would say this is more and more prevalent as we get more and more of these SLs and other cards that have just more upgrades on them in general. Don't forget your bomb tokens. People just, you know, you forget that, you know, if you play a TTS enough, it just spawns bomb for you. Don't forget your bomb tokens, the right ones. Make sure you have enough of them and have extra just in case. If you have, don't forget your obstacles. Make sure you actually note which obstacles you have when you submit your list and have them pictured on your list when it's printed out. Also, on your printed out list, it would be probably worth printing on the back, if you don't already have it printed out as a card, any of the cards you are playing that are eroded, pilot or upgrade. For me, as an example, I'm going to print a giant Ferrosphere card from the thing from the errata version on the back of my list, as well as having an alt art that has the new rules for it, as well as having the original. So I'll have three different versions of proving Ferrosphere exists in some capacity on my list, and there's the correct rules for it, as well as visual representation of having it on one of my ships. So, and then as well, if you have, speaking of alt arts, if you have official OP alternate arts, those are legal. If you have alternate arts made by the community, I believe those are not legal. They have to be the official utilized pilots and upgrades across the board. Only reason why I am bringing my Ferrosphere one is because it's an eroded one. And I could easily just produce the rotted version on the back of my list as well, even if I already have an other card with the official wording. It's easier for me to hand my opponent a card to review versus finding a whole sheet of paper list and flipping it over. Both are going to be available for my opponents.
I would say at a minimum, for anything that is alternate within the rules, have the legal actual card there and in the list, whether it's like sleeved in the same card or whatever, just to prevent any kind of confusion.
That's a good point. And double check your cards that you have all the real ones.
Oh, that is true. Yeah.
Don't forget, this is a requirement. People don't use them. Bring crit tokens. Mm-hmm. You actually have to have crit tokens. Crit tokens are a reminder that you have a crit card on your ship. Bring crit tokens.
Yep. I would also bring some extra tokens that you may not even have in your list. As an example, jam, deplete, or strains that you may not see as often. You may not even have any effects in your list that use those, or tractors even, just to make sure that you have your own copies of that if something comes up and you need to use that. If your opponent has them, have those available for your own ships. Will, did you have anything else you wanted to add for making sure what you have ready for the event?
Objectives really helps. Make sure you bring those. They're not part of your list, but you do need to bring them. Now, but other than that, no, I think that's it. As far as what you need to play. Good attitude, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, as competitive worlds can be, you should still be going there to try and make new friends, not enemies. Let's be real here. This is just a game. Sure, there's going to be a high competitive level, but don't be going looking for adversity.
I think we hit that category pretty good. Anything else you want to add to things you'd need or should have for Worlds?
Oh, good quality shoes.
Oh,
no joke. If you haven't got yourself a new pair of shoes in a while, this is like the perfect time to do it.
With some support.
Yes, support. Don't buy crappy shoes. Like, actually bring something that supports your arch, that has enough cushion for your heels. You're going to be standing on hard floor concrete the entire day. If it helps, bring one of those standing mats. I know people who bring their own little mats to stand on that a lot of cooks like to use. That's also completely something reasonable you can bring and stand on to help your feet throughout the day.
Yeah, those, that's what I was going to say. The little rubber mats that, like, roll up. When you know that people put like in front of like the sink or stuff like that, those are really good. They'll make it a lot easier. And for us vertically challenged, it'll make
an extra inch.
Yeah. Tequilasaurus Rex in the chat saying breaking in new shoes during tournament. Ideally, so. This is around the perfect time to get new shoes, but you should have walked around to them a decent amount before Worlds. Like, you don't need to buy new shoes and then the first time you wear them for a real day is at Worlds. Like, don't do that. Like, you should be walking in them for a few days prior.
Unless you got, like, some really, like, heavy basketball shoes or very thick leather shoes. Most like New Balance Asics or, you know, those little like cloth shoes or running shoes, it don't matter. Just as long as they've got nice breathability, because you also don't want your feet sweating and all that, because you don't know the temperature inside. So I'd probably, if you have some of the cloth ones, again, New Balance Asics or some of the Puma like mesh ones and stuff like that, you'll be fine.
Speaking of deodorant.
Bring deodorant, please. That's not for you. That's for me.
That's for everyone else. For us.
Also, there's like people have gotten kicked out of events for BO. So don't be that guy or girl. Yeah. Just don't be that person.
There's a real rule in the Yu-Gi-Oh tournament regulations that says that players must be, what is it, of good health and. What is
good
it?
Hygiene.
Hygiene, yeah. That people can actually be kicked out of events for it. So please don't be stinky. Maybe throw on some. I don't even care if it's Axe, if anything.
All good ideas.
And then one last thing to actually read through the player's packet, and because there are a couple of things in there that it says to bring, so
mainly two pieces of your list. Yeah. Don't forget that. A tip
go ahead. Sorry, go. I was gonna throw one more, but you go first. It might be the same.
I was just gonna say, I think what the judges at Worlds are looking for, but one thing I did see was people printing out their list in just card form. I believe, I want to say it was a Yasby thing, but maybe I'm crazy.
If you're talking about Infinite Arenas, I know that's not allowed.
No. I'm talking that it shows every card broken down.
I would clarify with the judge if that is an acceptable way to print a list. They may just want it in text.
No,
list
it's just for showing like your opponent.
Here's
my list.
My note was that if you can make sure your like list printout, if you have one that shows your card abilities, would be preferred. Whether it shows the actual card or if it just shows the card ability, because I can tell you that my Poe's got an Ion Torpedo, an Underslung Blaster Cannon, and Overdrive Thruster. But if you don't know if what any of that means, it doesn't really help you to know that Poe has it, right? Or like what False Transponder Codes is. Like I see all your ships have this upgrade, but I'm not familiar with it.
Or even some of like the SL cards, like the new abilities.
That's true.
Like Grit, or the Chiss Engineering, where we haven't seen it that much, it would be really nice to have at least written out or in card form, like another copy of your list. I would probably still bring two standard copies of your list, but like maybe a third to like to ease your opponent into, especially if you're bringing some of that new stuff.
I believe on Yasby it's the fancy version.
Is it fancy?
Yeah, it does say...
Fancy.
If you're using Yasby to print out your list, use fancy. At least for one copy to give to your opponent. Like, I think that's, like I said, somebody had, it must have been from maybe Launch Bay or something, but they had each card, like, visible when they, for each of their ships. So it was really recognizable. Yeah. Being like, oh, you have Ferrosphere. That's what this does. Why is there a plasma torpedo on your tally? Like, is that legal? I guess so. Marcel, what were you going to say?
It was not necessarily tournament related. It's just for the people coming in. Sure. Look ahead of time for what and where you want to eat, because especially for the X-Wing, because X-Wing tends to finish at like 6 p.m. or so. 6, 7 p.m.
True.
And the restaurants get really busy really fast. Reservations are recommended. But look at the different options, because it's really easy to show up at a restaurant and have an hour and a half wait if everybody's showing up to the same restaurant thinking like, hey, this would be a good, you know, this makes sense. Because while X-Wing isn't, you know, like a million people, it is a full con. There's other... It's a miniatures. There's Warhammer. There's other games going on, and then it's still close to Chicago, so there's still, you know, just a lot of people in general. Schaumburg's not a small city, or it's not a small suburb, but yeah, just make sure that you have some options and that you call ahead of time, and if you can make reservations, make reservations.
That's a good idea, or just order in. You know, have fun.
Yeah, McDonald's is always option like W, but W. Still an option. Yeah,
yeah. I believe they do DoorDash and Uber Eats.
Well, hold on. Let's clarify, because I'm pretty sure there are rules against outside food at Adepticon. But as we've talked about, to have like snacks and stuff with you, just keep everything like in a backpack, or not just a blatantly out and like, oh, let's just order a pizza for 50, order some pizzas for 15 people in the con. Like, that, don't do that.
Very fair.
Well, before we get into our last of our game plans, we still might do a Scum and CIS game plan. Not before Worlds, but maybe after Worlds. Maybe we could find a... I don't know if he wants to do it. All right. Just me, I guess. Would maybe want to review that diamond in the rough, you know?
Okay, so, yeah. I'll tell you what. If we get a...
Like, if a CIS a list...
of a top four...
Sure, yeah.
You know, because that was a Scum.
Oh, no. If either faction, Separatist or Scum, makes cut top 16, like, we'll do it then.
Yeah, like, yeah, we'll do it. That's what I'm saying. Like, if there's like an undefeated in a Swiss day or something like that, like somebody really brings it with those factions, we're gonna spend the whole episode covering them, because
we'll check it out.
Obviously, we're missing something that the international community might.
The fangs are good.
I like how you assume it's an international person who would like bring in end up making top 16 with that. Unlike we have. Was it Alex Farley who made top 8 last year from Arizona, I think, who was like the main, I think the only Scum player in the top 8 from last Worlds. But the Hondo, like, he was the one who brought the Hondo fire spray that nobody had ever played against, really.
True. I mean, you never know. You never know. We'll have to find out. But this episode, not about Scum or CIS, it's about Empire. But before we get into that, we got to do one last bold prediction and or thing you want to happen. You're like a maybe goal, maybe it's a wish, a pipe dream that you'd like to see. I obviously would still like to see the finals be a brand new scenario, last minute change. They're never gonna do it, but you know, someday if we keep pressing for it, someday they'll make him play.
I'm in on that.
Is that a bold prediction or is that a wish?
That's a wish.
That's his wish.
All
right. What's your bold prediction then, Will?
Bold prediction. Scum and CIS in Top Cut.
So just both in the top 16.
Yes.
Okay.
CIS and Scum will play on Sunday.
That's doable. That's doable.
Bold? I don't know. We'll see.
It is bold.
James?
Wish. I really hope that I don't lose my voice. I have been sick nonstop, and Will can attest to this, since the beginning of the year. So I really hope that I don't get sick, I don't get ill, and I can power through for the entire event. That's my hope. And not a bold prediction. But my bold prediction, man, I think that we will not see Rebels or Republic in the top four.
Trying to gauge how bold that is. Four is real tight out of 250, 300.
No. It's not four out of 250. It's four out of seven. I mean, it's two out of seven. And two of those.
And it's also the percentage of like. It's also the percentage of like how much is brought.
It's 40%.
Because that's what I'm saying. So it's really two out of five.
Two out of five, because two factions we already are calling, you know.
And arguably, Republic and Rebel are up there as far as
popularity-wise. Rebel's the most popular faction. Republic is the fourth most.
Yeah, I accept that as a bold prediction.
You accept my bold prediction, Ryan? Any rebuttals?
No, it's a prediction. You're good.
Yeah.
All right.
I had to think about the popularity percentage between those two factions. That's heavily weighted towards Rebel. You probably could have just said Rebel, and that would be decently bold, to be honest.
All right. Rebel and Republic not in the top four.
All right. This is a very... I'm going to say this is a wish for James and Will, I think, and Dion. I wish and hope that the GSP stream has no connectivity or any issues for the entire weekend, and it's all very smooth.
I appreciate that from the bottom of my heart.
We need all that positive energy, you know.
On top of that, I will add to that wish as a across the board internet connectivity software thing. Wish that everything for Roll better and all the tournament software stuff runs completely smooth and has zero issues. That is my wish. Zero issues with softwares and streams and internet-based things across the board.
Chris just got so happy from wherever he's listening from.
You think he's listening at this rate? I don't know if he has time to listen to this at this point.
Yeah, he's probably so busy.
We need
a W after... Yeah. After our little fiasco.
All logistical things need a W.
Yes, agreed.
Bold prediction. It might not be bold, but based on recent history, it might be considered bold. So you can tell me if this isn't bold enough. Someone from the US or Canada will win Worlds.
Take the or off, and then it's bold.
Okay, someone from the U.S. will win Worlds. Back to the States.
I thought you were just in Canada.
When was now, the last
now I will say, champion? I could see the side of that not being bold enough just because of the percentage of people in the event is probably highly weighted towards U.S., so by the numbers, it may not be bold enough.
But I will say here. There will be more U.S. players. However, there's going to be more US players that won like a local store championship or something that have not been participating at larger events. People that are coming in from, you know, people that have to come in from Europe, Australia, or having to get a visa. These are some serious players. They're not your, you know, they won a local 16-person store championship, and, you know, now they're, you know, taking a $300 plane ride over here, you know. That. So I would say that the overall quality of the international field is going to be higher because it is a larger investment, and it just takes a lot more for them to get over here. So they're coming and they're serious.
Yeah, the pound for pound player from international is probably going to be of higher quality than the average pound for pound American.
With all that said, mm-hmm. I'm willing to go bolder. I was trying to figure out a way to regionalize this without saying a state, because I think that's too narrow.
Midwest.
Someone from the East Coast, East Coast time zone will win the U.S. Eastern time zone.
Okay.
Will win Worlds.
I mean, yeah. Maybe the best they could do is runner up, you know?
Which, by the way, East Coast, Best Coast.
So he's banking on himself. Okay.
All right.
I'm not taking myself out of the equation, but you got Paul Heaver in that list. You got Duncan Howard in that list. You've got
a lot of people, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You've got some heavy hitters over there. Basically, Indiana. Like, Indiana turns East Coast, so basically everyone east of Chicago.
Yep. It's got our finalist from last year, Andrew Cox. He's from Florida.
Ooh, yeah.
I mean...
There's some in there. I'm going to do two wishes because I'm special and I get to choose two wishes. And that, now I'm being reinforced because I got some dinner. Protein. Can you guys see all that? Look at that.
Got some food there.
It is. So I have two wishes. The first wish is that AMG makes an announcement in the future of X-Wing. So that's a wish. Whether it's the future of stuff being released, points being updated, or organized play moving forward. So that's wish number one. And wish number two was actually, I was talking about Kayla, so she came up on cue. I have a wish that she makes cut. I would love for her to make cut. So that's my wish for Killer to make cut, or for AMG to make some type of X-Wing announcement. Bold prediction.
Those are both great wishes.
Thank you. And bold prediction is a Battle of Endor Empire ship will win Worlds.
Wow, that is the boldest of them.
So,
it's a narrow window, yeah.
It's like, has to be Empire, and also has to be
Bo. I mean, it's those three are the ones that are being used, right? Like, it's either Jenden or Soontir. I mean, those are the main ones. But any of them. A Battle of Endor Empire ship will win Worlds.
Marcel's suddenly playing Empire with Endor in it?
Not those ships, but yeah.
I was going to say, I don't think he's taking himself out of the equation either, just like I didn't.
Well, I mean, I'm not putting myself in the equation. I've already spoken to the people that I've spoken. I'm taking a meme list that I'm taking a list that I'm expecting to have my Saturday open with, because I'm doing an ERP change at my company for the past 6 months. If anybody knows what an ERP change is. I apologize, because that is not a good thing to know. But yeah, so I'm managing an ERP change at my company, and I'm just looking for a vacation this weekend. So I don't expect to be playing Saturday. I expect to be hanging out with European people on Saturday. But Battle of Endor will win Empire. Okay. Ollivander Empire will win Worlds.
Wow.
That's almost like the most perfect segue, too. That's all of us, right? All of our wishes and
yes, it is. That is a perfect segue into the Empire, which is our game plan. How are we going to fight against these Empire? They got new tricks, new pilots, and they've been one of the most popular factions since the beginning of X-Wing. Everybody likes to be the bad guys for fun. Very fun to pretend to be the bad guys. But how is the Empire's numbers, Ryan? You gave us a great breakdown here. Hit us with those numbers. Yep.
So, go through some of the basic starts so we've done in the past. So, faction totals since the last points update, so basically since June of 2023, the Empire faction has been the second most popular faction, if you couldn't put that all together, being the Rebels was the most popular last week, at 18.78% of the field. Within the last 3 months, though, Empire faction has increased slightly in its popularity up to 20.22% of the field, which is about a 1.5% change of people narrowing it down to not playing other stuff and maybe playing a little extra Empire. Pilot wise, this fluctuated a lot over the year, unsurprisingly, potentially having to do with the starter pack for Empire including SSP Vader, so shifted maybe what Vader people were playing, and also the TIE Bomber pack that shifted what Tomax people were playing, and now Deathfire is thrown into the mix. So if you look all the way to June, since the last points update, the pilots most featured within Empire have been Tomax Custom Version at 51.81%, Custom Rhymer at 49.48%, and Custom Jonas at 31.67%, and then Boy Vader still leading it up since the last points update at 31.67%. Then Rack at 28.31%, and then the SSP Vader at 20.9%. Now, in the last 3 months, you could take a good guess that a lot of those dropped off, because we have now since the TIE Bomber expansion came out, now Custom Rhymer, since SL Rhymer didn't make any jump, whether it's in the starter or the bomber pack. So Custom Rhymer is now at the top of 51.61%. The plasma version of Tomax, the TIE Bomber expansion SL, 48.92%. Rack increasing quite a bit to 47.31%. Deathfire at 32.36%. And then Custom Tomax from his original high point of being number one overall, dropping all the way down, 31.18%. After all of that, now we take into consideration that the major changes to Custom Tomax and Custom Rhymer's loadouts, and with Endor release, it's a strong possibility that the Empire faction within the whole season we've had so far will have had the most up and down changes of their most popular pilots over the entire year. And Endor just was basically released about a month ago, so we don't even know how things will still even shift after Worlds. Focusing on Worlds, what does this all mean in general? So it is likely in 10 rounds of Swiss, you'll face 2 to 3 Empire squads. Pilot-wise, since nothing changed with the SL Tomax and Deathfire, and being at the 3 points, you should expect a majority of Empire squads to have the TIE Bomber expansion SL Tomax and the SL Deathfire. Beyond that, you should also practice knowing what to do against the starter Vader and Rack. It's not common they're in the same squad, but you should still overall be thinking about how SSP Vader and Rack perform and which one of those, like, are you, because you can completely have a Empire list that has pretty much the same guts but has Rack instead of Vader, and you could feel completely different about the matchup because of how Rack impacts the board and how Vader impacts. So, Empire has a wide variety of options right now, but very clear winners in the 3-point slot with Tomax and Deathfire, it seems. Any notes from you guys after all the numbers and potential outlook for what we expect to see from Empire before getting into our quick thoughts on Endor?
So, I don't agree with the numbers. The numbers are what they are. I don't agree that those numbers are good.
Sorry, I was eating my ribs. But I don't agree that those numbers will be even similar to like the numbers that are going to be at Worlds for that. Simply because you are going to have some Soontir, but you know, Soontir is still 3 agility with a 1 bat die away from dead. But I think Jenden, I didn't hear a Jenden in there. Jenden is the biggest game changer in the game right now. He's old Defender Vader is what he is. You know, Defender Vader, 9 points. You know, being able to change the game. A ship that can line up a bullseye on an opposing Poe, on an opposing any Initiative 5 ship, you know, Kylo or whatever you call it, and be able to throw a double modded 5 dice attack and still have 3 agility and 6 health left. 6 because, you know, you spent the shield to get the 5 die. That is the biggest wild card, and that is the biggest game changer, because that also guarantees a crit almost because you got to roll the focus. But
no, it still has a regular change hit to crit.
It's just, then it guarantees a crit. So it's even worse than I thought. But yeah, I think that is going to be the biggest game changer out there is a Jenden on the field, because it makes every other I-6, whether you're flying Anakin or anything else, I don't care how many tokens you're passing, 5 dice is still 5 dice. And being able to double reposition, target lock, and then have a soft mod on that conversion from focus to crit is just... That's a bad boy. That is a bad boy, and so you have to know how to deal with him.
If we're transitioning right into... I mean, may as well.
Right? Are we transitioning?
Pretty much, like... Cause
it's not the numbers,
There are no numbers on Jenden, which is why I left him out, right? I think one thing to keep in context, right... I do get the threat is there for opposing I-6s, but if like Rode exists, right? Jenden doesn't get to line up that bullseye against every I-6 he plays against because he might move first, right? And then it's trivial for a 7B Anakin to get out of that bullseye, or a Poe, or a Vader, right? And if Jenden spends all his mods, especially his focus mod, on that offensive shot, if enough shots are coming back at Jenden, He can take very real damage. I don't know, like, what... So, some experiences you guys have had either with or against Jenden, Will or James.
I played a lot getting ready for the Draft League games. Idea to test Jenden was strong for me, so I got a couple games in with it. Tried different... ways to support him to see like what he would be at his maximum, and he takes damage whether he's doing it himself to try to get an early advantage or he's getting caught out of position. That ship takes damage. It doesn't matter how many palps, how many coordinates you have, if you shoot at it enough times, it will take damage. Now, will it take a lot of damage? Probably. Will it take a lot of shots to do it? Probably. Though it will, unless it has a dedicated coordinator, you're probably not going to have focus evade on that ship, which does greatly reduce their survivability compared to the full throttle ships we've seen in Defenders, right? So it's very scary, but if you either have an answer for it, like another I-6, you could go out and fight them, or just enough health and arcs, the classic clone beef out there. You could just weather his one attack per round. And as long as you're getting shots on him, right? Obviously, if you're letting him just 4K and, you know, no one's even threatening him, so he can spend that focus lock on every single attack. Yeah, he's one of the best, obviously. But the ability to get him into those positions, it seems less and less likely with the opponents he has to fight. As you said, you know, Anakin, Vader, Wedge out there now. All very capable to defend against ship.
I mean, to be completely honest, Jennin can't just like show up and be, and if he has to move first and Wedge gets to move after, even though Jennin is much more maneuverable as a defender, I mean, Wedge, if Wedge shows up and APTs Jennin, Jennin's not happy at all.
No. And he really don't
like
run.
Like a Fenrau Fang with like crack shot and like clan training, it's like shows up and gets to lock Jennin and has a range one crack shot lined up. Like that's still really scary. So no. I think realistically, Jennin wants to start hunting the stuff he doesn't have to worry about that moves after him, right?
Yeah, like, that is true. Now, a tactical, just a piece of advice for you guys. Because the people that I've flown have not been taking advantage of this tactical piece of advice.
A little more volume.
Yeah. Oh, man. I blame the ribs.
Stop eating the ribs and eat the mic.
These ribs are good. Okay, anyway. A tactical piece of advice that I have that people that I've been playing lately have not been taking advantage of is most of the people that are flying, or at least most of the people that I've played that are that are flying Jennin are also flying like Vizier with Palpatine. Is if you're playing against a Wedge or against something else that hits hard, and you lose the, you know, you lose the initiative roll, evade. Just take the evade. The evade plus the palp focus is, but most of the people that I've been playing against just do everything they can to still be aggressive, and they'll chase like a lower initiative something trying to kill it, and then they leave themselves open for the initiative six. You know, the initiative six, shoot after, and if they're moving first, they're like, I'll burn the shield and I'll throw these five dice, so now I'm only at three shields, and then you get a four dice back. I mean, just not making smart decisions. So just make smart decisions. But yeah, if you're moving first and you have a Wedge or somebody else moving after you, or if you're facing like a proton torpedo that you know that Luke is going to have it no matter what, because he's going to burn his, whether Luke or Kylo, they're going to burn their instinctive aim. Just take the evade. Take the evade and palp and live to 4K another turn. Anyway, that's how to fly it, not how to fly against it.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, this is the wrong angle here.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, I've seen so many people think that they have to put out damage with Jennin that they just forget that you got to keep Jennin alive.
Oh yeah, I've been calling it. People who do that with Jennin are chasing the dragon too hard.
Yeah, spinning shields and both mods on offense. Yeah,
and then they sit in like three arcs and they wonder why is my Jennin dead or at one or two health. Like, oh no.
What were some of the other pieces that we don't really have data on for Empire?
Well, I think the next big one would be the new Soon tier, right? The new 5-point SL Soon tier should be something you expect to potentially see in Empire lists. I have, you know, heard from multiple other Discords or communities that some aren't as thrilled about him because they're concerned, as Marcel mentioned, like, it's the Soon tier fell conundrum. Like, if you fly him, like, God, he could just die if his variance kicks in, and like, you know, if he like takes a shot and And even with my evade force, he just triple blanks and like something, something direct hit or whatever, right? So spoil, I mean, yes, that can happen. But if there's one thing the Sutur is really good at, it's mitigating those chances a lot. Because with his ability twice a game to shoot something and then boost or roll to either get out of arc, get out of shots completely, or make shots much worse, is extremely good. It's twice a game, so you have to manage when you do it and when you really need it. But on top of that, with the at least one thing I don't want to lock me, the game won't be able to lock me with feedback emitter. And then basically having force evade, as long as you're not locked by who's attacking you. Make sure you remember that too. Just because, like, let's say you have a Luke and a Wedge, and your Luke locked Soontir, and Soontir's like, I think I'll keep it, because in Soontir player's mind, they're like, I'm probably going to be out of Luke's arc. I'll be okay. And then Wedge goes to lock Soontir after Soontir might have already moved, say Soontir moved first, and Soontir's like, I don't want that one. So even though Luke has Soontir locked, it doesn't mean that the blank signature is turned off for everyone. It's only turned off for who has the lock on Soontir. So if you're playing against it, remember, you your ship that is attacking, we need a lock on Soontir to get rid of blank signature. I mean, the biggest thing that makes that Soontir scared is taking multiple shots in a round. He's really good at mitigating one shot and mitigating another shot by moving out of it via his ability. But he does need to be pretty careful about his approach, and he can handle one shot a turn most of the time. But as soon as that second or third one comes in, and it's a relatively quality shot, not a range 3 obstructed, I have no mods, Soontir still has his force or evade. Like, range 2 shot is still scary for Soontir to have. So the more arcs you can point at Soontir, the better if you want to kill him. But sometimes it's not worth the effort to get that 5-point ship if you can't track him down because of his ability and system phase reposition. It is hard to make sure that you can, what I call, confirm the kill, because he is very good at getting out of arcs. Even though he doesn't have double reposition in the activation phase, he has three levels of reposition he could do, because he has a system phase 1, an activation phase 1 if he wants, and a engagement phase 1 if he wants.
Yeah, he can be tricksy. He still does that signal jammer, I think it's called. The one force per turn on defense if they're not locked.
Blank signature, yeah.
Blank signature, thank you. So they'd still get that ability to have one force or one calculate per turn on defense. So,
and don't bank on him.
Can't hear you.
Yeah, and don't bank on him like having to take a focus every turn. If you've flown distance enough, you'll know that repositioning is much more valuable, and having a shot is much more valuable than having a focus. Because a lot of the time you're going to end up double, you know, basically with a free target lock, being able to do the apex predator plus being able to do the, is it a trap or what is it called? It's something else.
No escape.
Yeah, the one that, so a lot of the time boosting into range 1, for example, will give you better results than just taking a 3-die shot from range 2 with a focus. Because that gives
assuming that you can, you know, bear roll or whatever to get out of that arc that you got.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, yeah, so when you're playing against him, you know, don't assume like, oh, he's already done like a system phase boost, so he's gonna end up like somewhere around here. Because it's still very likely that if you're initiative 5 or lower, you're still going to be looking at 2 more repositions after that.
So to summarize that, you want to try to get this Soontir in tight spots where they can't make good use of those after engagement or after they engage booster bear roll. So I think in the couple of games that I've played against Will, or I've seen Will play, he has gotten Soontir, or I forced Soontir into a tight spot to where they couldn't do that reposition to get out of all the arcs. They can only get out of maybe one or two. So see if you can try to force Suntir into a bad spot to where they can't make really good use out of that after engage, bear, roll, or boost.
Yeah. The last place Suntir wants to be is amongst very tight rock areas and in a spot where he can't shoot something. It's weird to say because like we're so used to like past versions of Suntir being like, I'm going to go run away and have all these tokens on me. But a little like current, a little like custom Suntir, because he needs that bullseye. Like he needs to point at something. But this one just needs a shot at something. If as long as one of those two charges are active for his ability, he at least has a reposition he can use if he needs to do it. And he can do some really silly things. Like I had heard I had spectated a game where a Suntir didn't want to get shot at range one by a wolf, but didn't want to eat a bomb. So he barreled in front of wolf, didn't get hit by the bomb, shot wolf, barreled back to where the bomb would have been, but already exploded, and didn't get shot by wolf, and didn't take the bomb damage, and took.
Yeah. I want to say Will did that to me in one of our games, and I was very frustrated for him to barrel roll out of something.
Just barrel stay back still. Yeah.
It's the triple roll where you roll action, roll after system. Shooting, and then you roll a third
and then roll
time.
System.
Yeah, roll in the systems again. Where it's just
something
like,
something five straight to the left or right.
Yeah, where everyone was looking. Yeah, everyone went right to shoot Suntir, and for somehow he got to the left of you.
Yeah, because you left
just
a
kept,
one.
Just
you,
kept going.
You left a, yeah, you left a one base area open, and you just excuse me, little pardon me, let me slide on through.
It's the sidestepping on a bus or something, trying to make your way through.
Oops, sorry.
Scooching down the movie theater aisle, just like
Super excited to see the movie.
That's exactly what it feels like, and he dumps popcorn all over you.
Oh, he does. He does pop that popcorn all over you.
Anything else that we don't really have a lot of data on that we're seeing a lot from the new Endor make a big splash in Empire?
I don't know about a lot, but I think this third one is. I think Marcel's played with this the most out of us.
Well, yeah, and actually, that's not the one that I was going to say. Okay, so.
God, Mike. Okay, I finished
that's
with
your
the
new
ribs,
nickname.
So.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, no, Mike I think you know you people with the money bags need to like get me a little red box with
if
the
it,
gain and the things.
Wait, there. Money bags?
If anyone in this podcast now is the money bags, it's you.
Just straight in like one of your cars for it, you know?
Yeah, I mean? One of your five cars in.
Yeah, Mr. High Rise. Right now,
oh my goodness!
Anyway,
get out of here with that.
So, So Scimitar is probably the scariest one, and that's
I think Scimitar. What?
Scimitar one, basically,
which is the initiative three
double modded. Yeah, right? Initiative three double modded proton torpedo. Now think about it. You're flying a 4-point initiative 3 double proton torpedo. If you are spending 4 points on an initiative 3 double modded proton torpedo opportunity, fly Gina. Okay, she gets a target lock at initiative like a million. And
alternatively, you could bring Goron. Goron protects Scimitar 1 really well, actually.
And now you're spending 7 points instead of 5 points, and Goron dies like a heartbeat.
Eight points. Goron's
4. No.
Yeah. Well, let's clarify.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
No. Hold on. Let's clarify.
Wait. 4 and 4.
You're speaking to Gina like she's a 5-point ship. You have to take that Braylon to make that Gina work the same. So she's also costing 9. So don't. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a package deal for both.
Yeah. So there's a package deal for both. But in Goron is not pulling Braylon weight. Let's just say it. Braylon better than Goron, Gina better than Scimitar 1. So
So in both situations, you're better off if that is what you're relying on. Disclaimer, I am bringing Scimitar one. Disclaimer number two, I did say that I'm not planning on playing Saturday. So don't, just because I'm flying Scimitar one does not mean that I am vouching for Scimitar one. I've had Scimitar one die in the first round of fire before ever getting any, not even a basic torpedo off, because initiative threes die after you have like five initiative five ships that are very common out there. So yeah, Scimitar one is probably the scariest one just because the free target lock and the torpedo and all that stuff. It's scary even if you've got some Palpatine and Gorin and you're trying to throw everything else to make it survive. That's throwing a lot of eggs into one basket. I think you're more likely to see the one that I was saying was the 3 point initiative. What is it? Initiative two? I think it's initiative two. TIE fighter.
Scimitar. Oh, the Scythe
Six.
Scythe six.
Yeah. So I think you're more likely to see this one than you are to see Scimitar one. Just because Scimitar one, while very effective, it's also very reliant on other ships to provide support. A bark? Okay.
Think Will's own dog.
Oh, got it. Gotcha. I think Scythe six? Sith? How am I
Yeah,
saying?
Scythe.
Scythe, yeah.
Scythe six is probably in my if I was using it would take the place of Lorier. Just because Scythe 6 does a lot more than Lorier does. Lorier, they're both three agility, three health ships.
Scythe is four hull.
is it four? Oh God, that's I'm
Yeah,
even
Scythe
thinking it
6
even
is
more.
four hull.
So I thought it was three hull, but so okay, so Scythe 6 is four hull. It doesn't have the native three die shot at range three, so your range three shots are not as good. But your range two and one shots are good, but then it also has the basically the Proud Tradition built in, where after you do, is it Proud Tradition or is it contraband? Is it an action or is it just focus? Pattern analyzer, gotcha. So it's basically got a built-in pattern analyzer when you're K-turning, you're still modded. So in my opinion, outside of Jenden and Fel, this is the third best ship in the best Endor Empire side of it. The not the best Endor, what is it? The battle over, not it's of over Endor, right? Maybe I should just read it.
Yeah, battle over indoor.
Battle over Endor. But yeah, so Scimitar one, very scary, can punch very hard, can die very easy. Scythe six still has three agility, four hull, it turns out. I didn't even know that. Has a pattern analyzer, shoots three and four dice at range two and one, and also has the native reroll, I think, for no escape as well.
Has no escape and predator, actually.
Both.
And predator, so it
And
can if
predator.
you
Pattern analyzer and predator. And over
But
dice range one.
that predator is more like someone walked into your bullseye and had nowhere else to go, type of thing, being because you're
Or if you
I2.
block, or if you can block people,
Yeah, sure. Or
but
funnel like larger medium bases into
no,
lanes that
but
you can
what I
use to
like about
telegraph.
predator, what I like about predator proton cannons or heavy laser cannon at lower initiative ships is maybe you don't land anything, but it does force the opponent to reposition or to consider not making a move that they would normally want to move because they don't want to be in that spot. So even if it forces the opponent to reposition, it's still like getting rid of an additional mod or an additional action that the opponent will want to do. Anyway, is there a disagreement that Scythe 6 should be listed number 3 in the most valuable Empire Endor ships?
It's hard to parse if it's the most valuable, but it's much easier to plug in because it's 3 points. I'll say for sure.
I would say the only detriment to size six is you're encouraged to bring another TIE fighter with him.
I don't even think I care about that at all.
Why is that?
He can shed his stress with formed up. So whether it's even a simple BSA or, I don't know, Iden out there, probably not.
I think I ignore that mostly. I think he's fine ignoring that completely. I mean, is it good? Yes. Is it so good that I want to bring another Tie Fighter for? Probably not.
I think it's a non-lock red token, if I'm not mistaken.
If it's not a lock, then it doesn't matter. I would.
It's in the end phase, anyways.
No,
I mean either way. Double one here. It just actually it just says stress. Specifically says stress.
Stress.
Yeah, I think it's like design wise, it's meant to go with Major Mienda, who does the end phase repositions for TIE fighters. So if you like do things together, then you just dip that stress completely for each one of them.
Right.
But I don't think any of the TIE fighters are currently worth considering. Besides just Scythe 6.
So you would say this Scythe 6 would be easier to plug in and more versatile than another 3-point ship, like a TIE Bomber or a Lareer?
Out of Endor, which was Marcel's original question.
Okay. Yeah, okay. All right. That I'll concede to that.
Yeah, and then I would say Scimitar 1 is probably behind that. And then after Scimitar 1, I would probably say that for agility, if focused, TIE Fighter.
Yeah, Sapphire 1 Interceptor.
That's kind of crazy. He's 3.
Sapphire
3. He's initiative Sapphire. 1, but his number is higher.
I think it's actually Sapphire 2. They make it really confusing.
Which is really confusing, because I flew both of them in a game just for fun. And the Scimitar 1 is initiative 3, but the Sapphire 2 is initiative 1, so it's just all...
Don't get us started.
Yeah, Sapphire 2 is initiative 1, yep.
Why we couldn't have just called them the numbers that they are for initiative would have solved so many problems.
So many problems.
It's like they did it on purpose, that none of them match up.
Outside of these four that we wrote down, Sunterfell Colonel, Scimitar 1, and Scythe 6, do we expect to see any other Battle Over Endor Empire ships?
I think out of everything else that's available, that Sapphire 2, maybe. But I think people would be... If people are concerned about running Sunterfell for 5 points because of something 3 agility, my variants, then people are going to be even more concerned about running a I-1 interceptor with only 3 health and no special higher defense other than holding focus, extra agility, which still good. I will concede to that. But there's more concern for that dying for 4 points than Suter is for 5 points.
I've flown, what's that TIE fighter from the scum that gets the extra agility against medium and large base ships?
Oh, a Hav.
Yeah, I've flown a Hav against medium and large base ships, and that 4 agility only gets you so far.
But, yeah, well, also a Hav gets extra attack dice against those larger ships, too.
Yeah, but, well, so does Scythe 6. It's a 3 agility. I mean, it's a 3 attack ship. But yeah, that 4 agility only goes so far.
Well, we'll have to keep these new pilots in mind when we're thinking about scenarios. Empire, traditionally good in a couple of scenarios, though they do have some weaknesses. I'm going to take the easy one. Salvage. Gotta be Empire's best scenario, or at least one that they have tools to utilize. They love proton bombs. They love crit generation, whether it's Vader's automatic crit through his attacks, Deathfire's launching of his proton bombs, Reapers who can carry boxes while aileroning, then of course TIE Bombers who are going to drop those bombs. So if you did pick up a package, do a tow action the following round, you might not be able to reposition out of a dropped payload. The other ships like Rack also have a natural crit generation there. And then, of course, Jendon's Proton Cannon. So it's almost every single person either has offensive rerolls from the... not It's a Trap. What's the opposite of It's a Trap?
No Escape.
No Escape. Whether it's No Escape rerolls or relying on target lock based munitions, they do reroll dice in that way. So their crit chances are significantly higher. But it comes at a disadvantage. Without Reapers, it is hard to hold on to those crates after the initial pass because a lot of Empire ships are speedy, maneuverable ships. So now you're at that disadvantage where you might not be at your best. Especially those action invaders, the Soontiers we're talking about, any high initiative ship with linked actions, gonna feel the weight of that tow action. And then, of course, to me, offensive heavy actions as well. Vader's lock. We're talking bombers, either focus or lock. We're looking at the ships like Soontir, Brack. They have that offensive action reinforce or focus that they really need to up their offense. So not a lot of ships willing to go out and just jump on an objective without any sort of like coordinator support. There's no selfless out here to help them. There's nothing that can really pull that attention away from ship. They do have the cheap 3 agility TIE fighters, but even then, that I feel like that's might just be a disadvantage to just offer up an actionless TIE fighter to your opponent. So, though they have these difficulties, I feel like they're still very good at salvage mission, and more specifically, savage mission, where they're out there just trying to destroy ships who picked up crates, grab a couple crates for their hurt ships, or a bomber at one health or whatever. It just flies away, dropping bombs behind it. To me, that's their best scenario. What about you, Ryan? What's a scenario they think they would do well at?
Wait. Did you say salvage is their best scenario?
I think it's their best. Do you have a counterpoint?
Yeah, I think the counter is that right now, the Empire faction is going to go very heavily into the I-6, into Soontir, Vader, Jendon, and I think you're starting to see a lot more. Either you're starting to, or you will see a lot more four ship Empire lists versus, you know, five and six ship. Well, I don't think you ever saw six ships, but versus five ship Empire lists. And salvage is like the worst thing that they want to see. Yeah, they can put out some crits, but they don't have any good carriers. They've got, you know, again, if you're doing the list that you're seeing out there is Jendon, Vader, Tomax, and Vizier. Vizier at one agility will drop those bombs. Will drop those crates. Tomax, he can pick it up. And again, at two agility with no hull, he's susceptible to drop them as well. And then Vader and Jendon probably don't want to pick them up. Right. Yeah, they got after.
Well, I'm going to take a hot take here.
Go ahead. If you're not picking up boxes with Vader, you're actively losing yourself games.
And I think most people will not pick up boxes with Vader. And even if they do, they should be, because you've got two afterburners and you've got
multi-actions.
Double actions, yeah. But And if you're bringing Boy Vader still, go buy a starter pack. Like don't
agreed. Yep.
Yeah. Don't bring Boy Vader anymore.
So you're like, saying
Boy Vader was good.
Borrow a friend's starter Vader that may have it that's not using Empire World.
No. Go buy one. We want AMG to still support this. So go spend some.
So
money
you're
on
saying,
it.
Marcel, a good game plan might be to make sure you have the boxes before they have access to them.
Yeah, but another problem with it. That? Yeah, but another problem that I was saying specifically with salvage is that there's a lot of high initiative things. So that means that I-5 and lower will probably be picking up those boxes before they do, and then you have to land those damage on them. And even if they land a crit and they drop the box, that's still a point that you didn't get. So and you're still having to go try to pick up that box later. It's just not a very good unless you guys are seeing different things. I have not
yeah
seen
but we want to know topic. So you are saying that's a good strategy against Empire. Remember, we're looking at fighting Empire.
Yeah, pick up the boxes because they're not going to be able to at Initiative 6.
Interesting. And especially if they have
They'll be able to knock them off very well against you, though, right? Those crit generation they have. It's a tough balance.
It is a tough balance, but you definitely don't want to give Vader a shot at it for sure. So it depends on what you're flying and what you're flying against. But again, Republic, you don't care because you're sharing tokens anyway. So just take the box, share the tokens. Rebel, again, you probably don't care because you have enough beef to be able to take something on the shields, drop it, but you prevented them from having it, and now you're making them fly behind you to try to pick it up and do stuff with it. I just don't think that unless you're flying something like the rack, you know what mm-hmm. the French dude. No disrespect to the French dude. You're an amazing player. There you go. Unless you're flying something like what he flew, where you've got a couple TIE fighters that are just out there doing objectives, it's really not a. The Empire, I don't think, is a very good salvage.
So Marcel,
more people should be flying countdown. Then you're a good salvage carrier.
If you don't believe salvage is their best, why don't you go over what you do believe is their best?
All right. What I believe is their best is actually I think they have two really good ones. I think they have Chance and Scramble as being very good for them. So which one do you want me? Because I think they're equally good in.
I thought you would say Scramble without a doubt, just because like Starter Vader has such a hold on that scenario on top of like the other I-6s that can be there too.
So let's do Scramble then, if you guys are saying so Scramble is a really good one because they're high initiative and that is something that you're not picking up a box and holding it. You're basically forcing the opponent to the lower initiative opponent, assuming that you're flying something higher initiative, to have to make the choice, okay, I'm going to give up my action to claim this, knowing that somebody's coming right after me to claim it right after me. And those ships, whether it's Sunter, Vader, or Jenden, have a way of multiple actions. So they're going to be getting the free target lock because they moved at a certain speed. Vader, because he's getting as many actions as he wants. Or Sunter because he's going to get the Apex Predator, the other reroll, plus the ability to reposition after shooting. They're all going to be able to do stuff after claiming those. So I think the Scramble works out very well for them. If you're flying something like, I know you just said it a minute. Was it Courier or
Corentin?
Corentin.
Is that Corentin? That's how I would pronounce it. In the English language, I don't know if that's actually how it's correctly pronounced in French.
So it's like quarantine. Okay, got it. Quarantine. yeah, if you're playing something like him, Rack's gonna be doing most of the damage, and then you got little like peon TIE fighters doing out your thing. So you've got stuff. I think Scramble is probably their best one. I also thought Chance was good, but I'll let one of the other guys are gonna take that one. I'm trying to think the different archetypes. So you've got the Rack archetype. Also another thing with Rack is if you're flying the Rack archetype, the opponents are going to be stressed and not taking actions anyway in a lot of the situations. So I feel sorry for whoever brings the two B-wings against Rack with Death Troopers.
Actually, B-wings probably care about it less than a lot of other things, right?
They get the free focus and target locks, but they're not doing any objectives.
B-wings can't even spare their actions to do objective actions anyway. So
true, because they want to stress. But yeah, so that archetype help. I mean, that archetype does well mostly because of Death Troopers. High initiative helps because they're moving last and they can press buttons last, and then they can, you know, they've all got some type of repositioning, whether it's that one time from the defender or afterburners or Sunter's million barrels. I don't know. Ryan walked away, but Ryan seemed to think this one was it as well. James or
I think they definitely have those advantages as I would consider an offensive faction. They very much offend me. No, I meant that a lot of their abilities, a lot of their strengths come from how well they can attack and at what high initiative they can attack. Of course, the TIE Swarm, you know, a bunch of generics could be a backbone of any Empire list, but their standout strengths are that high attack. They just dodging and, like, you know, taking an evade and running out to range 3, while effective at keeping you alive, it doesn't win you games in Empire anymore. So the ability to forgo just objectives in general and just focus in on destroying the other ships and dodging those key arcs, not having to worry about where am I and what am I doing, just having to engage the opponent, is, I think, one of Empire's strongest features. So it has to be the correlation then, that chance they have the ability to be successful. Now, can you still leverage that against the Empire? Absolutely. They're basically forced to come to you. They don't have any other options. So if you can out joust them, if you can focus fire better than they can, you could certainly start that kind of snowball and chance where, you know, you've taken out a key piece, now they're starting to disengage and fall apart, and that's when you can rally. Especially if they're bringing in smaller numbers. If they only have 4 ships, it's going to be a lot easier to track each one in chance and get those big half points. I mean, a couple shields on Jendon's worth as much as any other 4 damage on a 3-point ship. You know, killing a 3-point A-wing at 4 health, just knock Jendon's 4 shields off and you can get 3 points there. So they'll come for you in chance, but as long as you're prepared and can anticipate that, they can be defeated in it. Though I do think, if left to their own devices, it could be one of their stronger scenarios, indeed. What about the last scenario, assault? Nobody's vying for this. Why? What makes this the kind of the outlier for Empire?
Let's see. It's interesting because I feel like there's not like a bad scenario for Empire, in my opinion. But especially with having access to some solid, medium, and large bases, maybe not many of them, but some good ones, between the Reapers and Wreck, there are some, you know, viable lists that can bring those medium or large bases to utilize in that assault scenario. Additionally, some things like Deathfire or the other bombers bringing bombs can bring some AoE range denial, area denial, that could be very important in assault, where the people just want you just need to sit next to something the whole round. So either punishing them or making them move could be very strong. In addition to access to
James,
make sure that
James.
Was that
access to what
for a second
there? They have access to what?
Bombs? Where did I lose you at?
Access to bombs, a great area denial tool.
Area denial, yeah, exactly. So good area denial with ion bombs, especially making sure that they do that one straight or one bank, could be just enough to get them out of range of an objective. So, and Vader's ion missile, not used a ton, but could be very dangerous in this instance. But that being said, Vader and Mahler are the only ones that in the faction that are getting free boosts a lot. And Soontir and Jinden are really the only other fast, like 5-speed with access to boost ships that can really speed their way across the field and contest those far objectives. And the bombers really can't zip around the same way that as easily as, you know, as an example, A-Wings could, or other nimble interceptors. So they really can't contest stuff across the board unless they're able to, you know, until they get into the center.
Yeah, Mahler and Vader being limited on how many boosts they get per game.
Right.
Soontir, Jinden kind of be the only feature pieces that will have access to boosts to go get. Lorir's in there, right? So he can help go get stuff, but he's susceptible to getting killed for doing so. So I guess the same can be said for any low initiative A-Wing as well, but it'd have to be a lone wolf Lorir that feels at least a little bit more comfortable with doing that outside of, like, I think Keo is definitely one of the best pieces in the game as from the A-Wing comparison to go get an objective far away and still have evade force.
True.
Yeah. Like I said, though, I don't think that that Empire has a bad scenario for them. I think definitely they have scenarios that they would like to see more than others, but I don't think any of them are necessarily bad.
They have enough pieces to contribute to every one of them. It's kind of more specific to the list that someone may be bringing in Empire that would more narrow down what's more their best or their worst, or just the couple that are in between. Whereas if we look at the faction as a whole, yeah, it definitely looks like they have coverage across the board, but that's where
they have tools in the toolbox that cover those areas.
Exactly.
They may not be able to bring every screwdriver or every wrench to that in their list, so they might
good example is Rack, Tomax, Deathfire, say Lorir, and Feroff. Is a list, right? You put all that together and you're like, man, that one seems really good in assault, right? You got the medium base, you got the speedy Lorir, you got bomb control, you have Rack as a big base with some like control denial type things with Death Trippers and Vader making you concerned about showing up in that certain area. But then you look at it, you're like, this feels a lot worse in Scramble. Whereas if you look across to another Empire list that has like Vader, Soontir, Tomax, Deathfire, and pick your three-pointer, right? That one feels a lot better in Scramble, may a little worse in Assault, right? It's wide end of the spectrums that this faction can provide that have competitive lists.
Sure, it's one of their strengths you do have to look out for is kind of that large variety of list building, anything from, you know, triple ace BSA to, you know, an unheard of six ship or seven ship squad utilizing more three pointers and some of those non-limited TIE fighters. So definitely going to have to assess that each time. You can't just be like, oh, this is Empire, I got this in the bag. You do have to, like, is a Jenden, what's that Defender, how do their abilities interact with mine? So definitely something you're going to have to, that turn zero is going to be real important. You cannot let them catch you by surprise with, what's that bomber doing? Why are you getting out a 3-forward template? Do not want to be caught off by things like that.
Yeah, Deathfire's launch bomb still gets me every time of
the 5k drop. Trying to explain what the 5k three bank drop is with Deathfire. Pretty crazy. Speaking of, though, other turn zero things we could be looking at, Ryan put together an obstacle example I got up on the screen here, I believe. There it is. Can you walk us through your idea for rock placement?
Yeah, so this is a lot more particular to, as I said, the wide variety of things you see in Empire. And this could have been maybe how we approach some of our previous ones, because this is what your game planning, right? So the way I would phrase this one is verse an Empire list featuring Tomax, Deathfire, and maybe Rhymer, or basically like non-boosting ships that are bringing offensive threats with forward arcs. Those are the highest threats to your list. That's what you want to mitigate the most or make their life the most difficult. This is where I would put that. Similar to what I would use against a list featuring, if you were in our FO episode, a formation of rocks that mitigates the TIE FOs. You want to crowd their range 4 ban on their side, that when their approach is limited on this on the maneuvers they can do and the lanes they could take, or they're just going to be subjugated to like coming in from the side and turning in, right? Then it becomes much more predictable. So you could do that as well to ships in Empire that if the bombers are a big threat, kind of the lower cost grouping, and you want to make them attack individually through lanes or take a far side approach to where they're slower, you could use this rock formation where you crowd their range 4 band on their side, generally one in the middle and one on each side about range 1 to range 1.5 of that middle rock in the middle of their range 4 band. Any other formations from you guys that you think have worked well for you against, if you wanted to disrupt their TIE bombers or similar ships?
I just throw rocks out there, so I'm probably not the right person to ask.
I think in the case of if I'm up against Empire, I generally try to just set up rocks that would be most beneficial for me. I feel like they have enough tools to get around any kind of nasty rock setup that I do. So I feel like I just try to set up the rocks that would be most beneficial to me.
Yeah, as a clarifying thing, I would likely never put down obstacles that I believe would disrupt them if it disrupts me more.
That's
in all states qualifier of these game plans. It's designed to, like, you would put this down if it disrupts them more than it disrupts you. Mm-hmm. If any of these disrupt your plans more, it's probably not worth doing. Will, we could probably move on to the next one unless you have a comment on versus bombers, or maybe you play a lot of Empire. What's made your bombers the most uncomfortable?
Well, it would actually be a little bit of it's hard to say because it is scenario dependent, but because I think I normally have Rack with us with the bombers. This next one that you had, where the center is crowded, has been the most difficult. It's hard to come in like a line or any sort of formation because we had to, you know, pick our very narrow lanes. It's hard to fly like my Reaper next to my Decimator next to two bombers because we all have to split up.
Needs to barrel roll. So
yes, I need those rocks. Open lane for that. A larger lane than normal. So this example here to fight against the rack by crowding the middle, I feel like that could be the most impactful against these types of Imperial beef list, the bombers, if you will.
Yeah, to help paint the picture for audio listeners. So for in the next one that Will brought up, I had pictured you're versing an Empire list featuring Rack as that is your highest threat that you want to disrupt. This one it's not specific, but like you want to crowd the middle. Ideally, if you like with some level of triangle is probably the most consistent because you get to put down three obstacles, so you could put down a triangle. If they add more stuff to the middle to quote stop your triangle, they're not stopping it. They're just adding more rocks to a different shape. You're still creating a shape. The key is to probably put the point of said triangle pointing at your opponent, because it allows the flat side or the quote bottom of the triangle, the wider end of where they're attacking from, to be when Rack wants to bank or turn in, right? After Rack does like a three or four straight up an edge, which is pretty common, and then banker turns in, his attack at the like controlling the middle is more limited on how he can move around. So you kind of want to put two parts of that triangle a little bit on your side of the middle of the board so that there's more for Rack to try to reach around to get around, or to have to cut through the middle and navigate those rocks, or cut underneath too early and generally be on your opponent's side of the board most.
Yeah, I think that all makes sense to me.
Yeah. The next set is just kind of like variations on. Basically, you're trying to mitigate the flankers, your Vader, your Jen, and your Soon Tier. If they're on a solo mission, or you think they're not going to want to challenge. I mean, the biggest thing here is this is assuming you are generally a jousty list, or are better. You want the joust more than the Empire squad does. If they want it more, this is not the obstacle setup to do, because you're just giving it a much wider area for them to approach on a joust and just maybe put some ships in a spot where like they're coming from different vectors, but they're still jousting you, and you can only point at some of them. So make sure you are the better jouster if you're doing this. Otherwise, the flank will not matter; they'll just come right at you. But essentially, you're putting up a sidewall similar to what I mentioned about First Order. There's just a particular position to put some of the obstacles there. So if Vader and or Mauler or Tomax or Soon Tier do that five straight with a bank boost, they can't five straight again without having some rock interference.
Yeah, sort of like stagger them to where they're after the five straight bank boost, they couldn't just five straight and continue the engage. They have to maybe three bank or two hard to avoid the rocks. Or have to like five straight and then barrel roll. You know,
yeah, you want to make it as not the least easy as possible, right? So, but again, bear in mind, if you're putting up a sidewall, you better make sure you are the one that would win the joust anyway, because then if they mathematically win the joust and they know that, and you gave them a more open area to work with, they're going to come get you, and you would have been sad to put up the sidewall.
There's always one wrong person in the joust, and you better make sure it's not you if you're in it.
Sometimes you fly ARC 170s, and if you don't win the joust, you kind of can't do anything but joust. So you just try and joust as best you can and block as much as you can.
That is fair. That is an old saying. There's always one wrong person in the joust, so maybe Maybe it needs to be revisited.
Yeah. There's always one wrong person in the joust, but sometimes one of those jousters might not be able to do anything but joust, so they just do the best they can.
Yeah, maybe the three arcs can't do anything but joust, so just doing the best they can out there. Yeah, that makes sense.
Go get them, kids. Right? It's Jango, like, says to his
They have torpedoes! It's like,
go
well...
Go get them!
Go get them.
Well, we got one last one here, looks like. Similar.
I like it.
How is this different?
To clarify, the main variations I've had pictures for, one of the side walls is more angled actually on a curve down towards your deployment area because it's meant to mitigate a deep flank where you know something like a Soon tier doesn't really want to engage close, or Genin you know wants to go fast and wants to take that side. So you're actually trying to, like, once they do that 5-straight boost, there's like 3 layers of rocks that if you look at it from that diagonal point, there's really few ways to attack it. So they got to cut in either too early with a weird move, or they have to work way farther around, be perfect on their moves. This one's more just kind of in the middle. Just generally put like an average wall up. If you expect that the side attacker could reasonably go a little slower and cut in the middle line.
So maybe like
it's variations off essentially the same thing, just to keep in mind that there are versions that do slightly different things, but you'll probably want to experiment that yourself because this is also particular to what list you're bringing.
So I'm gonna play a little devil's advocate here. So obviously you're placing 3, but they're placing 3. So how it ultimately ends up is there and there. But in a situation like this, where you're putting everything to one side, or you're trying to put everything towards one side, those flankers, most flankers have like many different ways to flank. Flank isn't just like 5 forward boost and like get to the rear. And also, the other side is usually pretty wide open, unless, and also the center will be pretty wide open. So the flank, I don't know. I get the premise that you want to block off like one area, and I see where it makes sense a lot with like medium against the Republic and against like large base ships like Rack and some of the ships that want to have like a specific flight path that don't have a lot of you know, they can't like reposition and they can't change their flight path in the fly. But outside of, you know, if you're dealing with Aces or if you're dealing with small base ships and or even with like Vizier and Pharaoh, like if you got those type of ships around, they can mostly adjust their flight path and they're flanking pretty well. And I'm in the school of what James was saying earlier, where it's mostly like when I'm flying against those type of ships and it's not, you know, like multiple medium bases or large bases that can't reposition, where I'm trying to like stop them from doing something, is where I start pointing more of like, okay, how does it make my life easier? And like I start thinking about like myself, like what I want to do, and how do I keep these ship, how do I keep these obstacles from not being in my way? So that's kind of like, I know I said that I just throw them around like willy nilly, and I do that a lot of the time just because I'm lazy, but I do think, and that is what you said, right, James? Like you tend to like think about more like how does it impact yourself versus how does it get in the way of the opponent?
I mean, yes. Like, I'm just definitely making sure that I am not hurting myself more than I'm trying to help myself.
Yeah. But I do agree with it, like, when you're dealing with like, medium and large base ships, like, you want to make life difficult for medium large base ships or ships that want to fly in formation,
But if you're not facing against that, then I tend to, outside of those three things, if you're playing against, again, going back to like the Vaders, the Jandans, the Soonters, whatever you do with the rocks, they're going to find a way around it. And they're going to use it as an advantage one way or another. Like they're going to, it's going to be to their advantage because they can maneuver around them pretty easily. So I just make my own life a little easy. And like my initial two or three maneuvers make those open. So I know like when I set the rocks, I'm like, okay, I know I'm going to have my first three moves already pre-planned. Or not pre-planned, but like at least have my flight path ready. And just react to whatever they're doing. Because if they're placing at initiative 5 and initiative 6 and they're double repositioning and they're able to fly forward and then do some weird stuff, I'm not gonna put too much effort in having the rocks.
I mean, yes, they can mitigate it better than most other ships, but there are definitely still zones on the board where a common flight path that they take in most games you will want to disrupt and crowd up. So there are things you can do to them that it isn't going to stop them. And honestly, none of the turn zero rock placement stuff should ever 100% stop an opponent from getting what they want to do done. You're just either slowing it down or making it a little bit more difficult, like not completely like I get to walk up and do what I want type of thing, right? So all this should just be like, how much can I make my opponent's ships feel or the person playing a little uncomfortable with their approach or how they move around the board? That's why I use the word uncomfortable a lot in that, because that's the best way for me to get feedback from my opponents. Like, mm-hmm. like if I played against someone who used Jandan recently and I tried a slightly new rock setup against it. And I asked him, I said, you know, in some of the early turns when he was really thinking about stuff, and I'm like, are these obstacles, like the ones I set up, are they making you like think through a lot of this? Is this reason why you're taking longer decisions? Or I wasn't calling him out for slow playing. We were open dialoguing for a practice game and just asking, like, is this an uncomfortable situation for you to be in? Or after the game, was it uncomfortable for said ship to go on the path they normally would, or in general playing it because of obstacles? And I look to hear the feedback from that, because it shouldn't completely stop them from doing what they want to do, but it should make them feel uncomfortable is the goal. Yeah.
And again, like when this conversation started, I said that I'm not the best person to talk about this. And I'm genuinely not. Like, I have an idea of what I want to do. I have an idea of what the opponent wants to do, but I tend to play turn turn one the same way that I play turn 7 or 8, you know, just reacting to where the board is. That's just the way my personal take on it is. I play turn one just the same way as I play every other turn, not like pre-plan a lot of stuff. And yeah, in turn 7, you can have an idea of like your next three moves. So that's not like a turn one thing. So I'm not saying I'm right. What I am saying is that while I do agree that studying and being good at this turn zero placement and understanding what the opponent wants to do and understanding how to place rocks, how to make life difficult on your opponent and make life simpler on yourself and all of that, adds like it you know, it's like every little advantage counts. Is for the majority of players, myself included, they don't put enough reps. We, because I included myself in there, we don't put enough reps to be able to like worry about like all of the different rock placements for the opponent. So I'm trying to think like, okay, I want to make sure that my house is set, and I want to make sure that I'm enabling me to do what I want to do before I start worrying about like, okay, now what does everyone else want to do? Now I get there's value in this and the second as well, but I'm just saying, I think that's where most people are. Most people are like, I have a lot to think about with what I want to do, and where the game state is now, that I already know what I want to do from step zero, and now I'm just worrying about like, and preventing my opponent from doing everything that they want to do. Like that takes a level of practice and level of repetitions that I think most people don't do.
Yeah, I don't do. I'd agree. I think everything you're saying is completely like, yeah, like I don't see this talked about or practiced a lot, because it's already, I'll be clear, it's already hard enough and takes a lot of time investment just to perfect your own side of things. And this is still just a game and a hobby and not a job. So we can only commit so much time to it anyway. And there's just different, there's different people, different thought process on what they want to focus on or grow with or improve upon. And yeah, I mean, you and me, Marcel, we're commonly of different mindsets, but it's covering the basis for all of our audience and player base as much as possible, which, yay us.
Very true. Very true. I think we got
one little last part, right?
Yeah, we gotta make it quick because we've already hit our time. That is target priority. We've been talking a lot about these very powerful ships, very expensive ships: Vader, Rack, Jinjin, Soon Tyr. They obviously get one of them. Normally only one on the list, but one of them needs to be a priority target. Now, might not be able to destroy them, but you need to threaten them enough to get them disrupted, get them stop taking scenario actions, and maybe take a turn off and come around a different lane. Has to be a priority. Cannot let these expensive ships, normally heavy hitting as well, have free reign. Ryan, what's some other ships that are high on target priority?
This one's probably a little more on the squad dependent side, because it's hard to put too much aggression and target priority on 3-point ships, but you can't exactly just allow Tomex and Deathfire to do whatever they want, because then they're just going to do a lot of damage to you. So you have to figure out how best to play around or target them directly to punish them for doing what they want to do. Without the detriment of like diving so hard for them being only 3 points each, or giving up your ability to target a larger piece after doing that. I've commonly had games where I've tried to move around Deathfire just a little bit, so you can't just do a very easy, do a move, drop a launch a bomb, and just hit a lot of my stuff. I try and threaten something else, and then sometimes Deathfire might not go for the bomb because it's just I'm not there to be bombed. And then when Deathfire tries to show up on like the third or fourth turn, it's like maybe I turn some stuff towards him. I might take a proton bomb damage or two. But then, like, he's shown up really close. He's at range one of a couple of my ships, and I try to evaporate him. So he only gets to do one thing that whole game. Same with Tomex, right? If he shows up to plasma, I try to make it not easy for him to just throw plasma, right? Make him barrel roll weirdly, or, like, have to do a suboptimal barrel roll, or set up an undesirable target, right? Not giving up a good target for him to shoot at. And then when he gets to launch one plasma torp, hopefully his ion bombs don't affect you too much, because that could be pretty dangerous too. But then once he throws one plasma, like, you could throw a bunch of damage at him and make him really concerned to, hopefully kill him, or make him really concerned about staying in the fight at all, which means his plasma torp probably isn't there anymore because he's leaving. So, again, probably not full send all your focus, fire, and offense on a single three-point ship. Yeah, because you need to at least still threaten those higher pointed targets, and make sure if you have damage on those as opportunities to take advantage of that, but also have plans to not let Tomex and Deathfire do what they want against you freely.
That makes a lot of sense.
Vizier. Kill Vizier.
Vizier? Okay. Yeah, Vizier. I mean, obviously one agility would be a boon, but to say hurt a Vizier and then go chase it down might not be the best use of your time. So, hard to say. I mean, obviously,
Marcel, I would say go ahead and expand upon your thought about your focus on Vizier.
Yeah, so Vizier is usually there as a support ship, and he's usually there as an...
Probably higher Mike.
Yeah, so Vizier is there as a support ship. Vizier is there as a mission point getter. In most situations, he is probably the least offensive ship. You know, he's usually there to keep somebody else alive. Vader, Sunter, Tomax usually is probably what I've seen him most with. And even with the... And also in Assault, he is just very valuable in Assault as well. So even though he has the ailerons and he can be in a lot of different places, he's still Initiative 2. You can kill him before he shoots. And that extra focus that enables the rest of the list to just be able to get a freebie here and there is very valuable. And he's easy to kill. Like you're saying, I wouldn't put my whole guns against him. I would have put my whole guns against him. You don't. You typically only need two real hitters to kill him in one or two rounds. Probably two rounds. You probably, if you've got a plasma torpedo and then like a follow-up shot, two rounds is enough to kill him. And most lists right now are like five or six ship lists. So that still leaves three or four ships that are not concentrating on him. But yeah, like Vizier is just, if you don't kill him early and you let him run around and then just skirt the edges, and you every turn that he stays alive is mission points going to the opponent and is a free focus for the entire list to use whenever it's necessary. So just
true.
Kill him early. So, especially with the other ships that he's usually supporting, they don't die easy. So just get rid of that guy.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Definitely something you had to analyze when you first see their list. That is, of course, that turn zero. So important. We don't normally practice it. Just showing like okay, quick fire. Here's a five ship list. How do you handle it? Here's a four ship list. How do you handle it? But it could be something that would be worth practicing, especially if you're not as familiar with either the new stuff or factions. Like, I gotta fight, you know, eight droids from the CIS. You know, you gotta be able to make fast decisions. So always that turn zero, very important to assess those situations. But unless I'm missing anything, I think it's time for us to get out of here. So excited for Worlds coming up. I said a question halfway through that statement, but feel free to answer it. Did I miss anything?
Excitement really high. I want to make a small note. If I have extra, I've packaged them together, store champ kits in the other languages, in German, French, and Spanish. If anyone that primarily would use those languages for their cards, please get a hold of me. I will give you basically two store champ kits worth, at least the cards and some of the non-card items, but it's mostly the cards. I'd love for other people to take them back to their home stores and use them and give out pricing.
That's a great idea. If you have not just store champ stuff, but, you know, stuff from your local squadron you're trading off. Worlds is a great time to come together, swap some stickers, cards, anything like that. That was the, I would probably say, the most diverse of any tournament as far as player base. Players from all over the world. So, very cool to see everybody repping their different squadrons. Bringing, we got jerseys for mine. For ours. Ours? Mine? Same thing, I guess. So, that's pretty awesome to see. So, I'm excited to see everybody. The words can't describe. But maybe we will find those words on Thursday, when we start up the stream, Thursday, 9 a.m. Central. I'm so excited. James will be manning the helm, so definitely make sure to stop by and say hello to him in the chat or in person. Maybe. 9 a.m. is when all the other events start.
9 a.m. Yep.
Well, well. 9 a.m. That's only four rounds, though, so we got an early night in preparation for Worlds, which would be very exciting. Maybe we'll find some time to throw in Battle Over Endor, Aerodome, or I don't know. We'll find something fun. I'm sure. Maybe we'll just start talking to people, James. Who knows what we'll have time to do.
I know. That one's gonna be a crazy evening. We gotta get our dinner plans in for that one.
Start doing it now. Pizza. Delivered.
Pizza delivery, that's good.
Yeah. Real simple. No cats to hurt on that one, let me tell you. The food will come to the cats.
The food will come to the cats, and then the cats will come to the food.
There you go. No. Honestly, though, super excited. It was my highlight of last year, so real big. I would say expectations. That's not quite exactly the word, but, you know, hopes, I guess. High hopes for the event. Should be very good. But for everyone here and Gold Squadron, we're taking off. We're getting out of here. We'll see you Thursday all weekend, 4 days of X-Wing fun. So stay safe. Stay smart. Gold Squadron out.
Thank you to ISO, Danko, Baffle, Trojan, Prophet, Shadow, Tycho, Spice, Raider, Lancer, Fallen, Row 6, 626, Chief, and J-List, our Grand Admiral patrons. And all of our Gold Squadron patrons and community members, thank you for your support. Gold Squadron, out.